Battle.
Thank you, Your Honor. Robert Platel. A lot of people pronounce it that way. Your Honor, I would propose to begin by just quickly answering a few of these questions that relate to the map and the use and try and get that out of the way. First of all, emphatically, the area across the street that has a health clinic was properly zoned for that. It's not an ad hoc use on the map. It's zoned CS, which means you can put a health clinic there as a matter of right. So that health clinic could move out and another health clinic could move in and it could serve persons with mental illness and the city couldn't do anything about it. With regard to the site we're talking about, it's a special use, and that means that the WCS had to request this permission, but it runs with the use, not with the land. The city invariably puts a condition on a use like this that says, if you're no longer operating a mental health clinic, but somebody else wants to come in and operate a mental health clinic, they've got to come in and tell us about their clients. So that's how it'll work.
Are you saying the zoning's different on the other side of the street?
Yes, Your Honor. The WCS clinic is located in a local business zoning, which covers most of the corner we're talking about. There's two busy streets that come together. Right across the street, an area has been zoned commercial service, which allows a health clinic as a matter of right, and doubtless at some point in time, the health clinic that went in there was able to achieve that. The thing I'd want to emphasize with regard to the zoning category is that the city of Milwaukee has defined this corner and the surrounding areas local business, and they define that as an area that's intended to provide a wide range of goods and services to a large consumer population coming from an extensive area. So these are not the tree-lined neighborhoods of the United States Supreme Court zoning cases. So the city has zoned this corner that way and has allowed a variety of very intensive uses, even in the local business district we're talking about.
Well, but with a single purpose of commercial development, right?
No. Permitted uses include membership organizations, which presumably would be nonprofit. Permitted uses include
Ms. Platel, is the zoning aimed at drawing people to benefit the commerce of that area? Is that a rational basis for the zoning? I mean, we've been talking a little bit about arbitrariness here. Would you say that that's a rational decision of any municipality to concentrate in an area for either job production or for serving a broader community?
But from a zoning and land use perspective, if the city had an absolute objection to health clinics on this particular piece of property, they could have zoned it in such a way that it wasn't a special use as it is, but rather a prohibited use. And that's what appears on a zoning map, these large areas where the city says it's a special use, and the zoning treatises, they say that means it's presumptively appropriate, subject to the Board of Zoning Appeals receiving some special.
Well, is it rational to reserve under the special use approach so that you might expand the initial commercial decision or commercial setting that you've set up by zoning?
Well, let me first remind you that the city has decided that membership organizations and colleges somehow help that commercial use, so it's not just commercial
But they draw individuals the organization you described.
There are differences between
they draw people to come and involve themselves in the commerce as well as the specifics of why they're there for study or elsewhere.
And that was the testimony of our zoning expert who said this use, WCS, its clients and staff.
There are differences between colleges and mental health institutions that...
I don't know how to respond.
Not responding is not contemptuous.
This is Judge Rosner again. Can you discuss how the zoning restrictions hurt WCS and its clients because of their mental disabilities rather than because of the traits that they share in common with the general population, such as a lack of money, for instance?
That does seem to be the issue in the case. First of all, we've got this map that covers all the property that WCS looked at, and they did look at a lot. And after we went to the district court and back, they looked some more. So I adopt Judge Wood's use of the word a practical proof of necessity here, because they looked and looked and they couldn't find anything that was suitable to their purposes. And they know what's suitable to their purposes. There's certain requirements for a particular building that's going to house a mental health clinic. And so at some point in time, the building we're talking about being the only one that they had located, other than the one on South First that would have required a variance, they proceed ahead and purchase the property. I'd say here that the search process itself and all the steps that they took, they used numerous brokers, they got lists from the city, they redoubled their efforts after remand, and they couldn't find anything suitable. And so my statement would be that somehow, in some way, the zoning of the city of Milwaukee imposes an impediment to locating a mental health clinic of this size. And I don't think we're required to show that it's discriminatory in any other way, but it certainly did impact this particular clinic, and its search demonstrated that.
Does it impact it in a way different than the limitation on a height requirement for a drugstore and at the intersections that we're talking about?
Well, that takes me to the topic of hard versus soft zoning criteria. And WCS is not trying to vary setbacks or height requirements or so on. And I think that those requirements have much greater stature in land use law than criteria such as this is sort of kind of going to help a business district or this might hurt a business district. So I think it does make a difference. I don't think we would do as well on the reasonable accommodation test if we were asking to vary some, you know, black letter site height, density, something like that.
The city said,
I'd like you to address the same question I asked of your adversary. Since the United States' brief was filed after both parties' memoranda, I'd like you to address the question whether you agree with the United States' understanding of the meaning of Section 130B7, the regulation, and if not, what your difference with it is.
I agree with the United States' interpretation of that regulation. It stated that reasonable accommodation is a freestanding theory of liability. We can either get to it through the statute itself, or we can get to it through the regulation, and the regulation is valid.
Well, but I'm particularly interested in the portion of the United States interpretation that I quoted earlier. That is, the United States' view is that the plaintiff must prove that it suffers differentially because of the disability compared to somebody else who has the same goals and is not disabled. It's similar to Judge Rovner's question. That is, there may be other people who want to put a health clinic in a given place and find it very expensive. That's the question. Do you agree with that as the understanding of what the plaintiff must prove in these cases? That the regulation bears more harshly on the plaintiff because of his disability?
I believe that whatever municipal regulation or policy we are trying to seek an accommodation from must bear more heavily on the plaintiff because of his or her disability. And that extends from up to a group of people.
It then sounds like the only remaining legal disagreement between the parties is whether that can be done person by person, as the Department of Justice believes and as you obviously believe, or whether it has to be done on a statistical basis for a larger class of disabled persons.
I think that
because that seems to be the only remaining legal question.
That appears to be the only remaining disagreement with the city.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The city indicated that the primary factors impelling relocation was your desire to centralize its functions. Is that right?
This is exactly the same clinic with virtually the same staff, but for some turnover, that operated 17 blocks further east. So that's just not true. It's the same clinic.
But you were going to add additional components?
Exactly. Their educational classes that were difficult to carry out at the smaller clinic, they now offer more educational classes.
And office space.
Yes. Everyone was pretty crammed together in that other location, Judge.
Do you think Judge Adelman applied the proper standard to the facts?
I think Judge Adelman applied the proper standard to the facts, and I would add that Judge Adelman...
Well, where did he find that this zoning rule bears more harshly on disabled persons because of their disability?
I believe he found that other people at other health clinics who are not disabled don't face the same challenges that these individuals do. And an organization like WCS that knows exactly what it needs because it has this group of people comes in and describes that group of people and says, here they are and this is what they need. And that's a crucial component here.
Does that mean that this clinic is different than any other health clinic in that it stands in a class by itself? Therefore, it doesn't have to, under the regulation, doesn't have to show any discrimination. It can just say because of it's got this unique feature about it that it should be able to build where or occupy that space.
Using what I think is the proper language, the city's regulation bears more heavily upon this particular clinic because of its nature than upon other health clinics.
Well, and could
it is
I just
relatively
follow?
Unique. The evidence was that there are only 8 or 10 of this type of clinic in all of Milwaukee County. It's a very specialized entity.
I just wanted to follow up on this sort of single versus multiple question and also the by reason of question, because it would seem to me that if the correct approach is the single entity, then it would be enough to show that you needed this accommodation by reason of the fact that it's the mentally ill disabled people. And maybe if some other clinic that also serves mentally ill people runs into a similar problem in the future, they would have the same opportunity at least to make the showing. Maybe they could, maybe they couldn't. But as opposed to your needing to undertake the burden that the city systematically discriminates against the mentally ill. I think that could be a very important issue looking at the causation factor. I mean, is it enough for you to say that we were kept out because, you know, with all the neighbor testimony and all the rest of it, people really didn't want mentally ill people there?
I think that's exactly the case, and I was intrigued by the city's description of how easy it is to prove intentional discrimination or disparate impact. I just don't think that's the case. Perhaps I can save those quotations for a future day. The test has to be whether a single individual, I think of Mrs. Dadian, or whether a group of individuals that we can deal with as a group because of general characteristics, whether the regulation bears on them differently than it does on other people
because of their disability.
Is there some place in Judge Adelman's opinion that you would send us to look for that finding? Because I must say, all I see in his opinion is a declaration that an accommodation is required and then a long discussion of whether this accommodation is reasonable. It doesn't seem that the judge has ever addressed the question whether the zoning rules fell more harshly on the plaintiffs because of their disability.
Well, in one portion of his decision, he's reviewing the city's whole discussion of amelioration, that is, whether it helps people, these people with disabilities. And then at a later point, I believe he cites to the Oconomowoc residential case from this court and says, we have to tailor that test a little bit because the effect on disabilities is not being deprived of housing, but rather the effect here is its impact on preventing this clinic. So I believe he made that finding at that point. That's where I would direct the court's attention. If I may, Your Honors, one thought I have is that one of the important audiences for this court's decision is going to be local zoning boards. And I think one of the concerns I have as I look at this board's decision, as I look at other boards' decisions in all of these cases, it's that everything seems to be fundamental or outrageous whenever a group
serving persons with disabilities come in, well, for that matter, in the old race discrimination fair housing cases. And I think you could encourage zoning boards in these situations to actually tell you about the zoning, to go into why it is that the place across the street isn't really appropriate, to describe the lay of the land for you, if they want to present to you a rationale that says there's an actual good zoning reason, which means that the municipality's interest is fundamental, which then means that the reasonable accommodation would not be reasonable. And so what we have here, once again, is a zoning board that says, using the Econ-Walk residential test, WCS didn't even shift the burden to the city. WCS didn't even make it through the threshold. And I would argue to the court on policy grounds that what you want to have is a procedure where that threshold is fairly minimal. It's taken from this court's decision in Van de Zand, and the claimant has to come forward and say, here's a plausible reason for giving us this accommodation, and it looks to us like it doesn't run into any of the city's fundamental interests. And then, of course, the city is supposed to come forward and say, you were wrong about this or that, because here's our fundamental interest, or here's how we perceive the reasonableness issue. And so I think that would be very helpful. And it would get away from the situation where frequently district courts have to look at those zoning decisions without benefit of that sort of analysis. So as did the United States Supreme Court in the PGA versus Casey case, I think it would be good to encourage ADA entities to do that weighing and balancing, even if they don't believe the threshold has been satisfied, because district judges and this court are going to want to have that information in the future.
Well, getting back to Judge Easterbrook's question, so you're relying on the part of the opinion where Judge Adelman says WCS presents substantial evidence that its clinic is overcrowded and as a result its disabled clients are harmed. And then he explains why they're harmed, because the overcrowding interferes with treatment and increases their symptoms and so on. So is that the...
I believe there's a portion where he says, I find that the clinic is one way of ameliorating the client's disabilities.
Well, how much larger is the proposed site?
The old site was about 7,500 square feet. The WCS clinic is taking up about 17,000 square feet of this building. Now, one of the things the city made a lot about was that this is an 81,000 square foot building, and WCS certainly would have preferred to have found a smaller building. They looked for a smaller building. But now, as a landlord, they are renting out other parts of that building to a variety of uses, including a mixture of profits and nonprofits. But the point is, the 81,000 square feet has nothing to do with the case. WCS or anybody else in the world could have bought that 81,000 square foot building and used it for anything that was a permitted use. It's only because they wanted to use a little portion, not a little, but 17,000 square feet of that building.
Are churches allowed in this area?
I believe they are, Your Honor.
We've had cases, and we had a case in which the argument was that churches are not very desirable. They don't bring in.
Not in a commercial area, I believe the case was.
Well, and Your Honor, if I may, much was made about the non-profit status of WCS, but they were a non-profit when they were located 17 blocks away. Presumably, the planning entities of the city of Milwaukee are overjoyed that they've moved from there, allowing development there.
They were in this, the same type, the same zone. They were in the same type.
That comes from our expert. It has a different zoning classification, but our zoning expert said it's functionally indistinguishable in terms of the uses in the area and so on.
So you're really saying there's no loss of commercial revenues because it just moved from one place to another in the commercial zone, loosely described.
Right. And WCS is a nonprofit, but it can only claim the nonprofit tax exemption
as to the parts of a building that it actually uses. So the United States Social Security Administration rents a large part of the building we're talking about. WCS has to pay real estate taxes on that because Social Security doesn't own its own space. There's a commercial law firm that's moved into the building. WCS has to pay tax on that. So the parade of horrors that the city was talking about in terms of tax revenue is much less significant than it was suggested.
The overcrowding had to do with anxiety and other matters that affected the patients?
Yes, Your Honor. I would say that the overcrowding was in two different universes. One is there were literally places as big as the space in front of me here, Judge, where there were four cubicles with case managers who were seated with individual clients and presumably having confidential conversations about problems. And so now they're able to have individual offices. So the benefit of that is so obvious. The second thing is that this isn't just a place where people go for individual counseling. It is also a place that runs discussion groups, various classes, and so they were unable to do that because of space. So now they have several large classrooms and a computer lab and so on.
Are these people who live by themselves, are they sufficiently healthy to live by themselves? Or?
The designation in Wisconsin is community support program, and that group of individuals is able to live independently. That is, they do not need a person with a clipboard watching them in the middle of the night. So they're in apartments and so on, but they need sufficient supervision so that they need someone checking in on them regularly. So many of these clients would have WCS staff going to their home one or more times a day, checking in with them by telephone.
Would you say they have a serious mental illness, or are they just neurotics? So
you have to have
compulsive hand washers or something? Or
I'll just say, as an advocate in the system, Your Honor, this is a very desirable resource. Advocates try very hard to get clients into these scarce resources, and so this is the highest level of service that we provide outside of a facility in Wisconsin. These are
so to be eligible, you'd have to be
serious mental illness. And in fact, one of the requirements of the administrative code is you must be incapable of living outside of an institution, and that includes a jail, without the services that this clinic provides. So they had to go through considerable screening, and I assure you that the federal government and the state of Wisconsin and the county that pay for this don't let in very many people.
Physically, what is it? You say Social Security is in the same building, and how is the building laid out? Is it one floor, two floors, three floors?
It has three stories, Your Honor. It's a very awkward building. I believe 100 years ago it was an auto showroom with some mixed industrial uses. So there are four-foot-wide concrete columns everywhere. It's involved some creative rehabbing, and Social Security is in about 7,000 or 8,000 square feet. There's a private law firm in there, and unfortunately, the building was not ADA accessible. And so WCS, before WCS could either move in itself or start renting to these commercial tenants.
Guide dogs involved in
this? Is there some location where this clinic would not be appropriate, even though it was, let's say, had bus service and everything else, that say a residential neighborhood or somewhere else where someone would be able to buy the property and then declare this, this independent theory of reasonable accommodation and say we want the zoning change or whatever it takes to locate there? Is there some place that could not happen?
Our zoning expert covered that. And what she said was, looking at the zoning map, that there are several one and two family residential areas where this is not a special use, but rather it's prohibited altogether. And so she took from that the city of Milwaukee apparently thinks that those uses are inconsistent. The area we're talking about and most of the surrounding area, the local business district surrounds this large intersection, but then as you move into the residential areas in the neighborhood, they're not one and two family. There are large numbers of apartments, there's large numbers of duplexes, and so the her conclusion was that in multifamily residential areas where apartment buildings are allowed, apparently the city of Milwaukee is willing to contemplate that health clinics are a permitted use.
That relate to group living homes, too, for mentally ill or...
That would depend on the size. Our group home setting laws are all about an 8-bed can go virtually anywhere, subject to a distance rule. But if you wanted to put a 20-bed assisted living facility, you'd be looking to go to the Board of Zoning Appeals for a variance virtually anywhere in the city. I think I'll just summarize by saying that some of the concerns, I think, are with not just with the city's decision in this case and how I think this should turn out. That's obvious. But going forward, this court could certainly repeat once again, as it has done many times and as have other courts, that zoning is highly fact-specific and requests for reasonable accommodation that involve zoning is highly fact-specific. So that zoning boards across America could perhaps dispense with the these are fundamental, we don't even have to consider an accommodation. It would set a precedent if we considered an accommodation. Those things have really not been helpful to the discourse at all levels of government.
Mr. Plato, is the community served, by that I mean the actual patients, mainly residents of the city of Milwaukee?
Virtually all, Your Honor. There's affidavit testimony from Ms. Fuller, who heads this clinic, and she says WCS takes people when they find them, that is, as they come into the clinic, but that one of the clinic's missions is to try and move people out of the center of the city out into other areas. And so there's a map of where WCS clients live that's attached to Ms. Fuller's affidavit, and I can tell you that virtually anybody that doesn't live right in the center of the city was moved there since they've come into the WCS program based on WCS's desire to normalize clients as much as possible and move them out into other types of housing.
You have a lot of satellite clinics or whatever they call, aren't you? Don't you? Something like 11? What do you call them?
I may be confused, so let me start out.
Maybe
this
I'm probably the one confused. So is it more than one central location? Don't you have other?
WCS is a fairly large organization. This is one of the things it does. For clients in the community support program, this is the only clinic, this is the only location.
What do the others do?
I believe they run a federal pre-release center. I believe they run some programs that divert people from the criminal justice system in the Milwaukee County jail and so on.
Do those get special uses when they put where they locate those?
It would all depend. For example, a federal halfway house would be considered a group home under Wisconsin law, so presumably they had to go to BOZA and get that approved. But I believe I may have confused you in another way, and that is this. What I said was these programs are very rare. In Milwaukee County, there's almost 1 million people, and of that 1 million people, certainly a lot of people receive mental health services, but less than 3,000 are in programs like this, and they're run by a variety of providers, including WCS. And my point was just that the court does not need to worry that a door is being opened here, because this is a fact-specific realm, and the facts here are that the people served by the WCS clinic are not just people with mental illness, like people who might need to see a marriage counselor, but rather They've gone through this whole triage and evaluation process, and then they get served. They get assigned by the county, actually. It's not their choice. They get assigned by the county to one of the community support programs, and in this case, they get assigned to WCS. I don't know what else to say other than our position is consistent with the United States Department of Justice. We don't believe there's any requirement for proof of other types of discrimination. Reasonable accommodation is a freestanding right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Plato. Mr. Smokowitz.
To respond principally to a couple of points that Mr. Plato raised in his argument. First of all, it appears that WCS is now arguing that the search process itself is proof of the impediment that the zoning laws of the city of Milwaukee posed for the disabled for a mental health clinic. As the record shows, however, there is 789 acres within the search zone within the city that were properly zoned, including many downtown office buildings in the city of Milwaukee. Part of the preference that WCS had nothing to do directly with any disability in this matter. It had to do with a preference for ownership as opposed to rental. Many of those facilities may be owned by others and may be subject to only rental availability for WCS. But there's
is
no
that evidence. Discussed in Judge Adelman's opinion, preference for ownership?
If it's not discussed in Judge Adelman's opinion, it is discussed in the it is raised in the Board of Zoning Appeals hearings. They indicated that they had certain criteria that they posed, and one of it was that they wanted to have ownership.
So you're arguing Judge Adelman overlooked something? Is that?
I don't think Judge Adelman believed that was an issue that he wanted to or felt that
did
was.
Did you press it on him as an issue you
yes,
wanted
yes.
him? And
yes.
He didn't discuss.
We did raise that issue with them, with the judge. We did argue that that was not an appropriate consideration here.
The record before the zoning board tell us how important access to public transportation is for this particular clinic.
That was one of the criteria for having a downtown location because of the availability of bus transportation.
And Wisconsin Avenue has more buses that converge on it and more than any other street in the city of Milwaukee. Is that correct?
That is correct. But the problem here is that to just simply argue, as the plaintiffs have, that the search process itself is proof of impediment here is insufficient, we would submit as a matter of law, to show that this is actually bearing more harshly on that the zoning regulations, whether it's the overall or the process of the variance, that it somehow bears more harshly, points to a great problem here. If you do an inadequate search, you can substantiate a case without any kind of statistical analysis or what have you. And that is the problem presented by the fact that there is so much available land. And, in fact, the city did find in the remanded hearing a perfectly appropriate, properly zoned approach application.
Thank you. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.